Oh, you can sit anywhere you want. Thank you, Elizabeth. That's all right.
Yes, we want you to be able to breathe.
Right.
So.
Well, I actually just asked them to turn, it was cool back there, so I asked them to turn the air down a bit. If you find it hot, just let me know. This afternoon session will first attempt to make sure that there's no one who wanted to speak or would like to speak who hasn't had a chance to do so. So this is a continuation of this morning's discussion. Some of our panelists are still here. Matthew, unfortunately, had to leave. But as you know, this session is being recorded. We are going to audio stream the symposium on the web, on the website, so that those who were not able to participate will have access to the discussion, and whatever conversations come out of today and this afternoon will certainly be part of that dialogue and the ongoing discussion that hopefully this symposium generates. So if we can just open it to further comments and questions, suggestions. Rosemary.
A generalized question. One thing that has been happening in the gallery museum world in the last few years is a gradual development, not just of museum studies, which has been around for a while, but all of a sudden now I think virtually every major art department, definitely the art colleges, people are talking about curatorial studies. There's different programs being set up. There's centers for curatorial studies. So there's this whole kind of burgeoning use that the universities and the art colleges like, because it might just qualify as training. And, you know, it might be practical compared to art history or something like this. So there is a push from it in that kind of sense. But one of the things that I'm involved in this myself, I teach in a program of curatorial and critical studies at the College of Art in Toronto, but there are many other people here that either teach art historians who come into these programs or museum studies, and I'm sometimes very confused about and interested in what I'm doing, but not really sure where we're going with these programs, because I don't really see a demand for them coming from the institutions that we think we might be training or educating people to go into. I don't see that demand coming out of the institutional apparatus or the parallel gallery system, where people have evolved into curators in those places rather than being educated or trained into it. And I'm interested here particularly in the sort of younger generation of people that are here. They're looking for jobs or have come out of these programs, trying to understand where we need to go with them or what we need to be doing. This is kind of a vague questioning, but it's something that hasn't come up here, and we've been talking so much about the museum and the whole crisis of the museum. So I'm just going to leave that float out there in its kind of fuzziness. And
can I catch it?
You can try.
Just to give you an off-the-record, Matthew's gone, so I can... It's being taped, I know. No, he said something, and I don't know the details, but at Cando, they are... this is in a direct answer to your question, which is an excellent question, that the museum directors are proposing, at least Matthew is and maybe others, an internship program of greater dimensions than has happened until now, to really provide on-site experience for younger people. I don't know if that is directly your concern, but I thought it was.
Could I make a comment?
Yes. If I could just add, in 1993, when Judith was a visiting fellow and scholar at the University of Leeds, she convened a two-day seminar which had a similar sort of set of questions as today about what happens to, you know, museums and beyond. And John Bird, who is a professor of art history at Middlesex University, was one of the participants. and he was participating with his university in a new curatorial program that was set up at the Royal College of Art jointly with the Tate in its first manifestation. And during the course of our discussions, what became very clear was that there was a profound tension in these programs between a kind of predominance of this being a short circuit into the world of now these plum cherry jobs of being a curator, and his contribution to the course was to teach post-colonial theory and critical theory and feminist theory, and in a sense mess up precisely the sleek, sort of rather like, you know, like seal skin, you know, all those creatures of the sea that have these wonderfully sleek, beautifully sort of run hair so that they can move swiftly through the water to their prey. And in a sense, the all this critical theory is like kind of great carbuncles and stuff stuck on the edges, these otherwise fast-moving, you know, professionals who are going out. And it was an absolute, you know, tension where it could have been extremely strategic, because if those curatorial studies programs were places where this otherwise swift movement into what is already the practice could be interrupted so that they came with great chunks of stuff that, you know, couldn't easily get through the door, but in fact would rather like, you know, cartoon characters, you know, break through and leave the shape of something else, then there would be entrances of that kind of shape for other people. Because I think what didn't come up this morning was all the sociological studies of the role of curators and museum directors as gatekeepers. And that's the main, you know, the main model, that these people are gatekeepers to ensure who does and doesn't get through the door. So I'm trying to give you a kind of very visual image of these encumbered, but otherwise, therefore, transmogrified creatures called curators, if their minds were filled with a different agenda. But that's, I think, the critical notion is it just imagining, trying to, you know, follow this fast track into these plum jobs in the museums and galleries unchanged, where people simply don't know what to do because they never got the equipment. So I think that these are very interesting places to imagine that, but that's the question. Are you going to service, you know, the professional interests, or are you going to be training people who will come in with a different shape, clunking behind them all sorts of obligations, responsibilities, all sorts of lines of networking connection, which can, again, explode the museum?
Mary. Okay, go on.
I just wanted to make a practical intervention here, if I could, since this question came up about a critical and curatorial studies program that I initiated at UCLA in the School of Art and Architecture. Just an example of what Griswold is describing. In terms of the usual kinds of courses that emphasize arts management, what you're suggesting is something that perhaps can be called critical and curatorial studies. At least that's the label that I gave to the program. You do an MA within an art department, but in the School of Art and Architecture there are two museums, the Arm & Hammer and the Fowler Museum. And the program's designed to take two students each year into this program, and they work one each with the respective museums. And how it's very different from the Royal College or from Bard in New York, that also has a curatorial program, is that the emphasis is on the theoretical and academic work of the people who come in on their projects, and they work exclusively on these for 2 years in conjunction with the mentor at the museum. And some of the things that have been undertaken by the participants in this program, I think, are quite inspiring. One that is opening soon, which is on activist groups in the Southwest, which includes very interesting and original research on this kind of activity. And another one was on the archive of Abby Warburg, and was again very original approach to the installation itself, rather resembling, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Museum of Jurassic History. Mm-hmm. But neither one of these projects were very palatable at all by the museum. And there was a moment of total panic when she proposed the Abby Warburg project to the Fowler in the middle of the anthropology museum. And that negotiation, you know, although it was difficult, was very successful in the end. And also with the work, the activist exhibition, which included bringing all these groups to the gallery and having continual programs over a period of a month. Again, as you can imagine, there was a moment of panic by the museum when they thought it was going to be opened in that way, but it actually worked. So I think that in the context of institutions like the universities, especially when there's a connection with the museum and there's a possibility of a program where you can combine it with a degree, that the important aspect of that is how it's kind of organized pedagogically. That is how it's framed, how it makes it possible for students to do that. And I included in this an option called public programs, and Judith actually wrote that program and wrote the material for the course that I submitted to UCLA called Exhibition and Public Programs.
Right.
And also there's another course called Exhibition and System that has to do with it. But anyway, I did, you know, I know this is a very long contribution, but...
No, it's the mic.
Oh, oh, not talking with Mike. Okay, well, I just wanted to make it known that I had worked with Judith on the production of the public program option, and I wanted people to know that that program was available in case there was anybody out there that was interested in inquiring about it. And then further to Griselda's point, to show that there is a kind of example of what you're talking about that has kind of worked up to a point.
Thank you, Mary. I'm just going to add, and then I want to move on to other people in the audience, that I know that UBC has a program and that York has just introduced a program, many of its students are here today, which attempts to address the very issues that Griselda has spoken of and Mary has spoken of. And I think there is a growing awareness. In fact, the shaping of this symposium talked about the need to bridge the silos of the institutions, and each of our speakers on the subject today, including the initiator, has spoken of this question of the importance of breaking down the isolation between the academic, the world of practice and critical theory, et cetera, and how, in order to practice today in this area, we have to understand a new type, you know, what we're talking about today. Now, Vera insists that she has to speak, but I want to let you
have a very quick...
Go ahead.
Once Joyce has invited all the questions that didn't get asked this morning, but the focus of this session is to plan ahead, and then, so what I would like to do is, once the questions have been asked, is to solicit suggestions of how these worlds can be bridged, and that can range from individual programs that exist to ideas of how, for example, Griselda has proposed perhaps gathering again in a year's time,
2 years.
In 2 years' time, and what your suggestions would be to us of how we could have done this better. Or other than we, in other words, this is the session that really is looking forward.
But doesn't cut off any debate from earlier. Okay.
Right.
In this conference, I find Vera had most of the dialogues which could be quoted and unquoted. One of the things that she said yesterday was what was achieved and what was intended. And I think that brings us to a very interesting question and possibility of curatorial, the things that we are talking about, where the curatorial field is concerned. And that is the role of independent curators versus the role of institutional curators, and how those roles are different, and how their interaction in an institution can bring about more variety of exhibits, and hopefully the quality of exhibits as well. I would like to ask the panel how they feel about what are the restrictions placed on independent curators when they approach a gallery to work on a project, and how do you feel that it would be a better thing if the institutions are more open towards curators, because artists directly approaching galleries is something which nowadays does not work very well. So if independent curators and internal curators, how the amalgamation in an institution would work? How do you feel that is a more positive approach towards bettering the whole concept of exhibiting in an institution?
Were you asking us, or are you letting that out there and addressing it to the panel that preceded this?
I'm open to that, because I think this is a vital curatorial. Curators are concerned that these issues become quite relevant, because most of the curators hesitate, or they find it's almost next to impossible to approach an institution which already has its own curators with their own agendas to come in and get an exhibition through, or they face immense difficulties.
Sue, did you want to pick up on that?
Well, just because I worked in institutions and as an independent curator, I think that you can have two different kinds of responses, and I think that depends on why you're being received at the institution or encouraged at the institution. In the last few years, as funding has diminished and there's been a conservatization in many of the museums, sometimes independent curators are being welcomed because they don't want to have full-time curators. And there's in fact a diminution of the respect for research and intellectual activity within the institution. And independent curators are seen as an inexpensive way of providing content in the museum.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be one way in which you're received. If you're being received because you fulfill an absence or a gap or a marginality in the institution, whether because of the medium you work in or the cultural practice that you represent, that can shape the response and the possibilities. And I would see those as sort of the more negative frameworks. On the positive side, you may be received at the institution because they're seeking to enliven their intellectual contact, their context, their curatorial perspectives, the diversity of their programming in a very positive way. And I guess I've seen that best realized in the position as an adjunct curator, where you sort of have the best of both worlds as a curator. So I think all of those factors can be involved. And I guess people always ask me, do institutions come to you or do you go to institutions? And I say both. And I would just encourage people that even if you've been discouraged once, keep going back, because you'll find those places that are friendly to the independent voice.
Julie.
This is an issue that's been bothering me all conference. It's been all about curation and artists and nothing about, or very little, about education. I was very happy when Griselda Pollock summed up Judith's philosophy and talked about the importance of audience and education. And to address Asma's question, it's not a question of getting your curator there, it's a question of evaluating your audience, seeing if your work will speak to somebody, some one, two, whatever, certain communities, certain publics, and approaching the institution and saying, I have something to say, it ties in with this community, and it's a question of educating. And I really find it, I was not surprised when the panel of curators talked about curating, curating, curating. I was very downheartened when Vera's first panel of six artists also talked about curating, curating, curating. And when Ms. Rogoff talked about audiences and reaching audiences and analyzing audiences, that to me is a function of education. And the issue of education and marrying education and curating together has not, I don't think, been fully addressed here at all. And I will say something on behalf of my big monstrous institution, that we do have an education representative on every exhibition and curatorial team so that these issues are addressed. It is hard, it is a big elephant to move, but the question of education, which was brought up by Judith, and really I'm sure that's why Matthew convinced her to come and work at the AGO, was a very, very important thing, and I find it very frustrating that education is not included in the same breath with curation, and that, you know, also audience and other communities is not mentioned in the same breath with curation. So I think it's really important just to see who you're talking to.
My name is Colin Wigginton, and I work as, or my position title at the gallery I work at, which is the McLaren Art Center in Barrie, is that of educator and curator. I exist in a somewhat schizophrenic state between those two positions, and I'm still yet to resolve how to bring those two things together. I have two things that I wanted to sort of bring forward, and hopefully the logic will make sense as I'm trying to root through myself what we've been talking about these past few days. One of the strongest images that comes to mind, as I've heard a lot of the discussion over this conference, is that of this mythic space in the ROM here in Toronto, which is something that's referred to as the bug room. And I don't know if people are familiar with that, but what I understand it to be, having never witnessed it, is a space where specimens are brought into the museum, formerly living specimens, and they're put in a containment space where insects are left to eat away at what remains of any sort of life, the flesh, the viscera, and what you're left with are these, you know, white bones that can then be stored, put on display, you know, what have you. To me, it exists as a fairly profound metaphor of a lot of what we've been discussing these few days. And when I follow through that image, something else that comes to mind, and this is going to go back probably about a decade, I can't even remember, and I'm glad to see that Bruce Grenville is here still, because I think it references, and I hopefully will correctly acknowledge this history. I attended a conference on curating that was organized by the now-defunct magazine M5V about curatorial practice at the Euclid Theater. And at that time, Bruce, and please do correct me if I'm wrong, characterized curators as parasites. And at that time, I read his discussion to mean that they were there as a form of irritation, that they were meant to call into question the practices of curating contemporary art in the gallery, the museum context, and I thought that that was quite interesting. But what emerges to me as I've heard the discussion this weekend is that the curator exists as a parasite in a symbiotic relationship with the institution, that the two are benefiting from each other, that the curator is calling into question the practices of the museum, but also benefiting. And I thought there were some interesting points that were raised about the museum benefiting from this reflexive look at the museum, and that it's all good, you know, as long as you're being talked about, that's the important thing. And I'm still trying to come to terms with this role of the curator as parasite, whether that's something that's calling it into question or benefiting from that association. But an extension of that I'm also wrestling with is this notion of, well, what kind of power does that parasite have? And I think that we all have powers that we fall into camps when we come together in this kind of conference. We're trying to entrench ourselves, our own beliefs, our own ideologies, and forward them by speaking through them and constantly sort of reiterating them. And in that context, I just wanted to bring it back to the case of the McLaren Art Center. And I don't know if it would ever be appropriate in the space of a conference like this, but to be inclusive, I totally support the point that was just brought forward by the educator from the AGO. I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
Julie.
About the absence of educators in this dialogue, but I would also suggest that there's an absence in terms of communications, fundraising, all the different elements that come into what makes a museum now a museum or a practice of exhibiting culture. And for those of you who may or may not know about this little show that the McLaren Arts Center was involved with recently at the Royal Ontario Museum, From Plaster to Bronze, the sculpture of Auguste Rodin, it's a context in which myself and my colleagues at the McLaren Arts Center, I think, are continuing to grapple with. And I wanted to bring that example forward for a number of reasons, because I'm still trying to sort through the experience of having been involved with that exhibition, which was extremely controversial in the Canadian, or I should say the Toronto media in particular. We had the opportunity to come into the possession of some work which we wanted to put on display and educate the public about, but it ties into notions of cultural tourism, trying to take essentially a clean slate, which is Barry in terms of the visual arts, bring the presence of the visual arts to that context, and do it through an incredibly complex mechanism of cultural tourism, government support, taking a smaller gallery collection to a larger context and trying to elucidate it, trying to have the support of our colleagues within this cultural field, I would probably more narrowly define as Toronto rather than Canada, where we were criticized for what we were trying to do in having a dialogue around art. And it just seems ironic to me because Auguste Rodin, being a 19th century artist, is part of the canon, and yet to discover that in the 21st century he's still highly contentious in terms of the kind of power that his image and his branding kind of embodies. But the Musée Rodin in Paris called for the boycott of the exhibition. But there's all these different things going on that it just, to me, opens up this Pandora's box of what it is that we're actually doing, who's part of this cultural production that we're involved with. And tangential to that, I wonder, I've not had the good fortune to speak to a lot of what seem to be very esteemed colleagues from the UK, but I wonder also, and as part of this whole thing that I'm spinning out for you, Tyler, tirelessly, is what their sense is of what's going on in this Canadian context, what I see as being a very narrow discussion about curatorial practice within the museum, which is actually quite an expansive cultural phenomenon.
Hi, my name is Christine Shaw. I too want to pick up on what Julie was saying about education, but I actually want to challenge it a bit in that I don't think education needs to be designated a responsibility of either educators or curators, but in fact it's a responsibility of everybody involved in that. I think picking up a bit on what Yuri was speaking about is that art is a form of cultural pedagogy in which we all participate in, and so I'm wondering what kind of strategies, both critical, curatorial, and educational, can be put forth in terms of understanding public and understanding the possibilities of art and culture to kind of import or export our findings back into the political kind of spectrum. I think that too is something that Yuri was speaking about in terms of what our strategies of producing kind of emergent, spontaneous publics, communities, actions, and events can do in terms of better understanding our life world. And so I'm wondering, do we have to make these distinctions and divides between curatorial and critical strategies, and then how that is brought back into the community through educators, and is it not instead kind of a collective responsibility that we are all participating in and contributing to?
I just want to say briefly that my impression is most of us would agree with you that the categories as they are now established, certainly in the museums that we know in this country, I don't know whether it would be correct to call them 19th century categories, but they don't meet the needs. They don't do the kind of work that Judith was doing. And I liked very much, as I said earlier, Warren Critchlow's designating Judith as a curator of education, although the title is awkward because there's no name yet. for that kind of integrated vision of how you treat art as a form of pedagogy and how you transfer the insights to the next generation. And I think as long as it's hierarchical and as long as it's cloisonné and as long as it has a taxonomy that is specialist instead of generalist and interdisciplinary, you won't get over that hurdle that Julie has sensed. So I would like to see a group of suggestions come out of this meeting, directly or indirectly, one of them being to change that taxonomy.
Wait for the mic so people can hear you. Thank you.
Identify
yourself, please.
Hi, my name is Melina Placentile. I am an independent curator and educator, and I see myself as both of those things. There's a number of things throughout the entire conference that I wanted to say. Oh, I've got points here, points there. And so the original comment I wanted to make about the conference I will set aside for this one instead. I don't think there needs to be a title for the person who is both a curator and educator. I think it just needs to happen. That's it. Like, people don't, you just need to have the vision and go forward with it. My personal interest in my career is to be a curator, and I want to develop my practice so that it is an educational tool. So whenever I come up with a show, I think first of what I hope that people can get out of it, whether they're professionals, whether they're interested in art or not interested, regardless. I don't see these barriers, and maybe that's just the result of being supposedly the next generation of museum professionals. But having spoken with a lot of the other 20-somethings in this room who are, like myself, attending a professional conference for the first time, just feeling that a lot of the issues being raised are things that we just think about all the time and things that we are already putting into our own practices, such things as communicating with audiences. I don't want to use the word we take it for granted, but we sort of do. We already try to communicate with people, even if we do a show. We spend a lot of time in the gallery just talking to people. I guess someone else made a comment about reading against collections. To me, that doesn't seem like a new idea, because anytime I'm approaching a collection, I should back up and say I've curated independently and also within an institution before, but I just look at this collection and say, okay, well, for the last X number of years, people have been just seeing these things for what they are, either portraits or landscapes, and drawing it that way, but I'm interested in turning it on its head, and I just thought that everyone else wanted to do that. So I guess the point of what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of people in this room who may not have felt there was an opportunity to speak at an earlier time in the conference, and maybe if a symposium included such things as roundtable discussions, or even if we each had 2 minutes to say who we are, what we want to do, and how we're making it happen, then that would have broken down a lot of the barriers that I think exist in this room right now, just between those who are experienced professionals and then the others. So I feel like the other. Just wanted to say that.
Thank you. Just a second. There's a comment in the middle. Okay? Yeah. Wait. Get a mic, and please identify yourself.
My proposal to the steering committee is that in 2 years we can try to uproot the term audience, because I hate it. And I think it has really, it has really bad underpinnings for curators and educators and people who are working within an institution or independently. I think that the undifferentiated association of the term audience, I think it in parts a kind of assumption of a relationship that is not a good one for us to be building on.
What would you suggest?
Well, I mean, it's a bad one. So that's, we've got 2 years to work on it.
could I just, like, before Abby closes, could I say that one of the things I think Judith might have said, and she may have said it to me, I mean, I don't know if you correct me, Susan, but in a way, my understanding of the idea was that there were communities of users, you know, and I mean, I know that the term user is associated with certain kinds of cultural practices that we might find not so sort of positive, but that's, it seems to me, what you're right, the audience is a kind of, you know, blank screen, and that's what I was trying to pick up in the image in the moderns of somehow this endless series of people who were brought in, inducted, and written upon. But equally, I don't fall into the trap of saying everybody out there knows, because we know that part of the thing that we're doing here is that there are certain kinds of ways in which culture are making artistic practices, as we understand them, change places. They were once fantastically elite cultures. They are now being displaced from eliteness by a certain kind of other impacts of the market, of capitalization, of the ways in which capital is making, you know, not just art and popular culture, but, you know, a whole different kind of uses of culture which come back to the museum. So to use, to make the people whom we are trying to imagine as participants in Erich's phrase, but also as users, is to be able to then specify, you know, how will they come in? And I think to go back to Martha's very powerful presentation at the end of the session several months ago now, since we've been living in here for weeks, but I found that a particularly powerful thing that you said about not having a reason to come in, but that the active process of finding a way for which somebody could come in and then find what it would be that this museum would be for. So I think that seems to me a very particular aspect of creating communities of people who will not just participate in, which already prescribes what they're going to participate in, but that this question of people who will make use of the museum, and that's what I learned from Judith, that people had lots of different ways they could use it. Some would be negative, some would be positive, you know, and I just put that one, communities plurals of users.
I'm going to ask people to raise their hand if they want to talk, so I can make a list and make sure that we get to those people and that we get all the voices. Okay, I see Robert. Wait, oh, you've got your mic. Okay, Abigail was actually next, Robert, so let me go to her, but I've got you on the list next. I see Sue's hand. And okay, and we'll go down here.
And Annette's been waiting for a while.
And Annette's been waiting for a while, but I want to get voices that we haven't heard from.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, hi, I'm Abigail Harrison-Moore, and I'm from the University of Leeds. And I just wanted to respond to the person who asked for the view of the UK contingent, which I don't ever just say that I'm going to represent the UK contingent, but the one thing that I think, and I've had lots of views of that, and I think there are a lot of issues going on here that I don't even have an understanding of, because I don't come from Canada, and I think there's a lot of issues simmering under that are wanting to come out, and I think there needs to be more anger, actually, is what I'm getting. But what's going on in the UK and what I think will impact upon how this should go in another couple of years is that most curators haven't got the time to debate whether they should be educating or curating or whether they should be researching. And what's come out here is the wonderful thing that you have the freedom to spend the time researching, considering issues, looking at these things, because most curators in Britain at the moment spend every day of the week filling in documents for lottery bids. I talk to curators every day in my role as I teach a course on museum studies, and they're spending the whole time filling in documents justifying why they should be given money. And so my thought about the future of this conference is, we're talking to the converted quite a lot of the time. We know that you need to think about issues, theories, you should inform your work by critical practice, you should welcome, you should consider the audience or whatever we're going to call it. But the funders, the people providing the money, don't want to do that. They're looking for a checklist. They're looking to see that you've performed the way that they expect you to perform. The politicians expect you to do that as well. In the UK at the moment, we're seeing a situation where art galleries and museums have started to be targeted as spaces where we could provide citizenship, which really worries me. And so for a conference in the future, I think maybe we should look, and they won't want to come,
And we've got to find strategies of how to force them to come, to bring in the funders, the politicians, the people that are holding back the really interesting research that I'm hearing going on. And just on a practical point, I think if we were going to do something in the future, it would be also good. We've heard lots of wonderful case studies, but to look at other ways of presenting those case studies through videos, through exhibition, so that when we come to the conference, there is more room for discussion once we've all seen what's going on. Anyway, sorry. So I'm back to the UK now, and you're very welcome to come and see us at Leeds whenever you want to.
There were a couple of hands down here. I'm going to come to Claire and Robert in a minute. Yeah. Mike, please, Jeff.
Sorry.
And Debbie, I saw you. I saw Sue. And I know Nanette's waiting, so we're trying to
hear you.
Hello. I think somebody at the start of this conference said speak or someone will speak for you. Am I speaking?
We can hear you now.
So as somebody who's 23, I feel like our voice hasn't been represented. I think that it would be great if the next steering committee included somebody from an undergraduate degree or undergraduate program. I think that more stakeholders have to be included in terms of strategies of engagement. We have curators engaging curators. I also think that when I came to Toronto, I thought it was a great opportunity to participate in the AGO. And when you go in there, you pay your money, and you can go through the whole entire exhibit and not meet anybody or not be invited to come again in terms of having a discussion or being part of a member. I mean, membership means reduction in fees. I mean, I'm not interested in paying. I mean, it's great as a student to have, like, to pay $2 less each time you go, but I'm interested in having access, having an entry point into that institution. Also, in terms of education, we're always talking about getting the curator's point across to the audience, and I think that we shouldn't be thinking in terms of who are we talking to and are they understanding what we're saying. It should be who are we not listening to, what voices haven't been heard, and in terms of flipping that whole diagram around so that the educators educate the museum about the stories and the communities that are out there, and that if they don't relate to the museum and they don't have some entry point into that museum doesn't function as a viable entity.
There was a question behind you. Yeah. Next to Jen. Sorry, I don't mind.
Thank you. It's Shutterpup as well. I just have a small point to make and an observation in connection with the issue of users of the museum, really. And just to support what has been said already, but again, by example, whilst I was at the Victoria and Albert Museum, I discovered not until then that there was, in fact, something called the Victoria and Albert Print Room, which is a space that is open to the general public to be able to go into their archival collections and actually handle various numbers of prints, drawings from people such as Rembrandt to, you know, more contemporary artists. But the thing that always struck me about this was the fact that in terms of, the dynamics within the museum, and its abuse of power was the fact that it is an incredibly well-guarded secret. And so as artists and educationalists, for my part, I'd certainly say that I see it as absolutely imperative to open up those spaces, to allow someone to marvel or feel angry or to fall in love with a print that they may hold in their hand that actually belongs to them.
Thank you. position, but I'm Debbie Friedman. Okay, I haven't forgotten you, but Debbie Friedman was next to her. What's that?
Okay, my name is Debbie Freeman, and I have the renown, I guess, of being Judith's sister, which in some way gives me the right to speak, but in other ways, what I'm, my legit way I would legitimize myself was by saying that I am an educator and I have been one for numbers of years. And I think that I've been trying to put together over the last 3 days the strains of discussion relating to pedagogy and relating to education. And I think that your comments just sort of made my, in some ways, my got me, sort of put it together for me. Because when someone says, I think of myself as a curator and an educator, I think that in some ways that is the problem. It's a really positive, wonderful way to think. But I think that it rules out allowing in the input and the role of the educator. And if I reflect back on a comment that Ruth Phillips made to me in a discussion, she said, educators, curators often think that their exhibits are more transparent than they actually are. And I think that that is the problem, that there is not enough engagement going on, and that one of the things that my sister did that I know about Judith is that she always went to experts. And, you know, she had a really broad definition of an expert, if I can just... I know a story of what an expert is, I'm sorry if I can digress for a minute, is when we were planning a party for my mother, and actually just a little while before Judith passed away, we sat down and we said, okay, what are we going to do, divide it all up, and Judith decided that we should make party sandwiches. So I was rolling my eyes like, what are you doing, where are you going, why are we doing this? I hope I'm not boring you with this, but I just wanted to give you an idea of an expert. Judith had been at some kind of party speaking to the artist, Neil Wedman? Yeah, I think it was him. And he had been bemoaning the fact that, you know, no one was making party sandwiches anymore, but he knew how to do it. So Judith decided he knew how to do it. He had learned from his mother, his grandmother, and this was an important art that needed to be carried on. So the first thing we